Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Writer Ethan Gilsdorf also recently undertook a nostalgic trip back in time to his geeky teenage past. A 40-something former Dungeons & Dragons addict, Gilsdorf is the author of Fantasy Freaks and Gaming Geeks, a combination memoir and travelogue. It's a story about role players, online gamers, and other citizens of imaginary realms. Gilsdorf told Steve Paulson that for him, it all began the summer he was 12.
Well, at the time, I was dealing with some very difficult things at home. My mother had recently suffered a major brain aneurysm. She survived it, but she came home from the hospital a greatly changed woman. And as a kid, as a 12-year-old kid, myself and my sister and brother and I were really quite scared and a little intimidated and just honestly a little bit freaked out about what this was going to be like. So lo and behold, there was a kid across the street from my small town in New Hampshire who showed up one day and said, "Have you ever heard of this game Dungeons & Dragons?" And he went ahead and explained to me this wonderful game where you get to play a character and go off on adventures and kill monsters and feel heroic and do things that you can't do in real life. And it really created for me a sense of empowerment and a sense of being able to do something when in my own world, you know, things were really kind of careening off the rails in many ways.
So did this become kind of an alternative reality for you?
It definitely did. I mean, you know, I played every Friday night from 5 o'clock till 11 o'clock from about eighth grade to my senior year in high school. And this was a regular group of kids, boys mostly, who played every week. It was also a world that I think is, you know, linked kind of in spirit with, you know, a book like Lord of the Rings, anything that's fantasy or science fiction, that kind of world that has a way of occupying one's mind, allowing you to really just disconnect from reality.
Well, it sounds like this occupied your whole high school experience. And of course, there are stereotypes about the kids who play Dungeons & Dragons. They're the geeks, the outsiders. Some would say the losers in the jock culture of high school. Do those stereotypes have some truth?
Well, at the time, back in the 70s and 80s, they absolutely did have truth. And I was a kid who was pretty shy and pretty introverted. And I didn't have a lot of self-confidence, and I didn't really have the kind of courage to sort of think to my mind, you know, I'm going to do what I want, and I don't care what everybody else thinks. The irony, of course, is that now, you know, 25 years later, everyone is playing games like this. So the stigma has lessened in many ways, although I would say there are people who are happy to play, let's say, Farmville or Mafia Wars on Facebook, but they would never, you know, be caught dead playing Dungeons & Dragons, let alone dress up in a costume and run around in the woods. It's just
that's which you have done, I might add.
I did do in the course of writing this book and in researching the book.
You obviously have kept your foot in the role-playing fantasy world, really, for your whole life. And you say that this has been an issue over the years with various girlfriends you've had. And there's often a moment of truth when you have to decide how much of your obsession with fantasy culture you should tell them.
Absolutely. To a certain extent, it had attached a lot of shame to these activities because they were really a kind of admission of defeat in some way.
So give me an example of that. I mean, when you finally revealed some of your dirty secrets to a girlfriend, what might happen?
Well, I had at one point rediscovered all of my old Dungeons & Dragons stuff. It was in a box in my parents' basement, and this happened around the time that I turned 40. And the girlfriend that I had at the time, I think, was sort of amused by it, but I think she wasn't sure what to make of me now that I had embarked on this kind of resaturation or re-geeking of myself, you know, back into this world. And it really raised a lot of questions for her about, could you be an adult and be responsible and get a real job and kind of go along the standard path in life and yet still be interested in these quote-unquote childish things?
Well, and you write that your first adult geek moment was putting on chainmail.
Right.
Things got a little more serious at that point.
Yeah. In the course of writing the book, of course, the intent was to really participate in some fandom activities like some of the more rabid ways to express your interest or fealty to, for example, Lord of the Rings. You know, when the Lord of the Rings movies came out in 2001, 2002, and 2003, that was another kind of warning sign to me because I thought, wow, I really am getting into these movies in kind of a scary way.
One thing that's so striking about the Lord of the Rings and much of today's fantasy culture, including online games like World of Warcraft, is that It's an imagined medieval world with swords and horses and dragons and elves. Why is this medieval fantasy so appealing?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. Traditionally, there's been a bit of a divide between, let's say, people who are into science fiction and people who are into fantasy. And generally speaking, science fiction books and science fiction movies are fairly pessimistic. You know, they're set in the future, usually after everything's gone to hell in a handbasket and, you know, global Armageddon has happened and it's people riding around, you know, it's Mel Gibson riding around in these, you know, souped up vehicles, you know, fighting each other for the last droplets of gasoline, or it's the robots have taken over. And oftentimes it's some struggle of, you know, man versus the machine, and ultimately the man will win, sort of like you see in Star Wars, for example. But it's a kind of pessimistic view that's very dystopian. Whereas in the medieval world, at least the way we would like to imagine it, you know, this is before global warming. This is before ATM machines and looking for parking and anything that had anything to do with technology. And when you're in that world, you get to reconnect with nature. You get to solve your problems in a very direct way, even though we can't really get away with solving our problems with duels and challenging people to fight with battle axes, you know, to figure out some kind of problem between you and your, you know, shift supervisor at Best Buy or something like that. We can't do that, of course, but there's something in our psyche, in our bodies that wants to take a sword and just run into the woods and save the day and defeat evil.
And there are people who quite literally take swords and run into the woods. And you visited some other fantasy subcultures as well. For instance, LARPs, live-action role-playing games. What happens in these?
Well, they're essentially like playing Dungeons & Dragons. And for many people who play D&D, imagining it wasn't quite enough. And they wanted to actually dress up like a wizard or dress up like a warrior and go on these adventures in real life. Now, they still don't really fight each other and draw blood and kill each other. They have combat systems that allow them to solve problems without actually inflicting bodily harm. Depending on which rule system you're working with, you know, some of them are very non-lethal. They use rock, paper, scissors to determine the outcomes of battles.
Now, I have to say, there is sometimes something a little weird about how far these obsessions can go. And I guess the question is whether it's unhealthy. What do you think?
Well, this is the big, you know, $60,000 question, and it's something that a lot of pop cultural phenomena over the years have had to, the hurdle they had to get over was new thing comes along, parents, teachers don't understand it, it gets vilified, and then gradually it becomes accepted, and then, you know, there's another thing that comes along, and you could use any number of examples, Beatles and Elvis Presley, comic books, horror movies, rap music, heavy metal music, they've all been vilified in their day and considered to be either dangerous or corrupting.
And then on the other side, what people often say about playing these fantasy games is that those worlds are more exciting than the real world of everyday life. I mean, that's why they're so attractive.
Exactly. And a lot of the games, of course, are designed to give you a kind of sense of instant achievement and instant feedback. Is it addictive? Maybe. Are addictive personalities attracted to some of these games? Certainly. But I would hope that as we become a more and more of a gaming society, and it's clearly heading in this direction, whether it's a really immersive game like World of Warcraft or something that you just do on the side, like playing Scrabble with people over Facebook, people do have the capability to still find pleasure and still find fulfillment in, quote unquote, the real world, whatever that means.
Ethan Gilsdorf is the author of Fantasy Freaks and Gaming Geeks. He spoke with Steve Paulson.